We're going to be in Acts chapter 5, so if you want to open up your Bible, that's where we're going to spend our time this morning together. I will mention real quickly a couple of additions. Jerry also helped cook yesterday, was up here on the grill, brought one of the grills down, and Bob was here off and on bringing a few other things to put on and sampling for us to make sure everything was right, so I didn't want to leave him out on that. It was a good day yesterday, and I know a lot of cooking went on, and I hope that you've planned to stay this afternoon or after this morning service to eat lunch, because I know there will be plenty of food. So if you haven't made preparations or you don't think that you should, go ahead and stay. We would love for you to be here and spend a little time this afternoon with us. I'd also just like to make mention that there are a lot of birthdays right around this time frame, but today we're celebrating a 97th birthday. And if you haven't said happy birthday to Bill, you probably ought to do that. 97 today, and we're so grateful for his life and so many things that he's done for this congregation, and we want to just wish him a happy birthday today, Bill. Acts chapter 5. You know, over the past several weeks, we've been talking about the beginning of the church, the beginning of Christianity. And for generations, people were waiting and looking for the Messiah to come. And He's finally come, and beginning of Acts, this book of history that Luke penned for us, He begins talking to us about the church, about Christianity. What does it mean to be a Christian? And how? And those all the things that we're going to go through, or the church was going through. And you know, the life of Christianity is a good life, isn't it? There are a lot of wonderful things that go on. We get to celebrate birthdays with one another. We get to eat lunches together with one another. We get to enjoy a lot of memories, make a lot of memories that we can share with all those people around us. There are memories that we will take and hold on to for a lifetime. Christianity is a good thing. Christianity is a wonderful life. I hope that you believe that. I hope that with everything that you are, you believe that the Christian life is the greatest thing that we can be a part of while we're here on this earth. And if you were to remember as we think back through Acts, and as we get into Acts chapter 5 and verse 12 and following, but I want you to remember a couple of things. As we look back, we know that the church in its infancy, it began in chapter 2, and we see that there towards the end of that chapter, some 3,000 people became children of God. In one day, 3,000 people gave their life to Christ, and the church began. And the excitement ensued, and their relationships with one another began growing. And it says they were meeting in their homes together, and they were enjoying this life, this Christian life, together. And they were making a difference in their communities because people were watching them and they were watching how they treated one another, and it was making a difference right there in Jerusalem. And a short time later in chapter 4, it said their number had grown to some 5,000 men. And the church is growing. And it's growing. And there in a few days' time, several thousand people have given their lives to Christ. And they're listening to the message because lives are being changed. And they want to know about this Christianity. What is this all about? Why are people flocking over to be a part of this? I want to know. And people continue, are getting closer and closer. And you look in chapter 5 and where we are this morning. And you skip down to verse 12. And it says that the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were taking place among the people. And they were all with one accord in Solomon's portico. And one more time, here they are. They're all together and they're doing things together. They're worshiping together. They're sharing their life together. Everything, the essence of Christianity they have, and they're sharing with one another. And 13, but none of the rest dared to associate with them. However, the people held them in high esteem, and all the more believers in the Lord, multitudes of men and women were constantly added to their number. Now we've got to such a point as Luke is recording this history, he's no longer even able to give a number to it. We don't even know how many there are. There were 5,000 men, and now there are multitudes of men and women. We don't even know how many. We've quit counting because it's growing that fast. There's making that much of a difference in this community, and the church is growing and growing to such an extent that they even carried. Now look at verse 15. Let's look at this. To such an extent that they even carried the sick out into the streets and laid them on cots and pallets, so that when Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on any one of them. Now, I don't want you to misinterpret anything here, okay? We're not talking, they're not elevating Peter to some great place, that he is the head apostle, that he is the head of anything. And there are some today that look back and think Peter was something different. Now, he was an apostle, and he had been miraculously empowered by the Holy Spirit to perform signs to attest to the things that he was talking, the message that he was preaching. That's it. Okay? He's not the Lord, and he made it very clear in all of his teaching. Anytime someone asked him or tried to elevate him, he didn't take that. He would not allow them to worship him. He would not allow anyone to elevate him above who he was. I'm a man. Now, I'm an apostle. God has empowered me this way, and you need to listen to the things I'm saying because God is the one giving me this message. But never is Peter going to take this kind of credit. But because God has empowered the apostles, and Peter is that one who's always talking, and everyone recognizes Peter is the one who's first going to open his mouth and start talking. He's not bashful. Okay? So they name Peter specifically, but it's like any time they want their sick out there just so his shadow might cross over. And then it says in the last there, and also the people from the cities in the vicinity of Jerusalem were coming together, bringing people who were sick or afflicted with unclean spirits, and they were all being healed. God was doing something special in these people's lives. They're making a difference. This church is doing things well. Great things are taking place. Multitudes of people are going, and things are going well. And so you get this picture of the church, and you see how wonderful it is, and you see the relationships that they're building with one another, and you think, man, I want to be a part of that. But you know, in our life, when things are going really, really well, it's almost a little scary, isn't it? Because you know it's that calm, or at least that's what we believe. There's that calm before the big storm. And we know there's going to be problems come up in our life. We know there are going to be bad things happen because we've experienced it. And there are bad things are going to come. And we know that this young church, this wonderful church, and they're excited and things are going well, but you know something's going to happen. And things start happening. Why? Because Satan knows that God conquered, God put him down when Christ was resurrected. Just as Satan thought, I've won, I've got him on the cross, and now he's dead, and no one wants anything to do with him. God raised him from the dead, and Satan knew, I've lost the battle. So Satan is going to do any and everything he can to distract people. And it starts. Now I want to share a story with you. I believe it was back in the early 90s, 90, 91, or 92. I was listening to a man preach down in Lubbock, Texas, and he told this story. And I don't know that I've ever told this story. You may have heard it before, but Dr. Jones said he was told this was a true story from one of his friends that he knew. And he shared this story, and I want to share it with you today. It was pretty kind of funny, but it just illustrates, I believe, what we're talking about. There's a family decided to go on a vacation. There's a couple of families, actually. And they got together and they packed their things and they got it all in their cars. And the other family had his pickup and he had a camper shell on it and had a pallet made in the back of it. So any point they needed to pull over or rest or anything, you know, it was all there. And so they go on this journey and they're traveling across the state of Texas and they're going on their vacation. And at the end of that vacation, they decide, we're ready to go home. And they're a little tired, but they're traveling, they're going. And right before they get home, there's a wildlife park, and they go through this park. Any of y'all ever been in one of those wildlife parks you drive through and you see all the animals and giraffes and all that kind of stuff? No one's ever done that? Well, they exist. We even have one here in Oklahoma. And you can drive in your vehicle right through it, and you're right there on the road. Now, they tell you, don't get out of your vehicle, because these are not pets. They're still wild animals. Well, this family's driving through the park in their pickup, and an elephant crosses the road. Only it stops right in the middle of the road. And they're waiting, and they're waiting, and they're waiting, and the elephant's just standing there. And what do you do if an elephant's in the road? Don't know, I've never experienced that, but I'm probably not going to try to push it out of the way. So they sit and wait. And finally the elephant turned and looked at them and walked over to the truck. Now I don't know if it sat on the truck, if it put its foot on it, what it did, but it crushed the front end of the truck, smashed the hood and the fender and did all of this. And then walked off. And so they turned the truck around, went back to the gate and said, I need you to come out and look at my truck. Look what happened. This elephant just smashed my truck. And they said, don't worry about it. We have really good insurance, and they're going to take care of you. Your vehicle will be just like new. It'll be better than new. Don't worry. Just fill out this form. So they did, and they went on, and they went through the park, and they got out and said, all right, well, we're heading home. They're driving up the road, and they look, and there's an accident just happened. Right out in the median of the highway. And so they pulled in to check on the people, and they're talking to them, is everything all right? Can we help you? And the people assured them, no, we're okay. There's nothing wrong. We've already called the state troopers, and they're on their way. So everything's good. You can go ahead and go. And they said, are you sure? Yeah, all right. So they begin pulling off, get back on the road to take off, and here comes the state trooper. And he sees a truck. It's all smashed up, and he's leaving this accident. So they take off, passes right by the accident, and chases the truck down and pulls them over. Why did you just leave that accident you were part of? I wasn't part of that. I just stopped to check and see, make sure they were okay. And they assured me they were okay, and they'd already called you. So, now you put yourself in that trooper's place, and what is he going to do? He's going to point at your truck and go, okay, what happened to your truck? What do you say?
An elephant sat on it.
Yeah, okay, well, let's turn your truck around. Let's go back, and we'll figure this out. Okay. So they drive back, and the officer asks these people, now, were they involved in this accident? No, they weren't involved. They stopped to check on us. They were really nice, and we appreciated that, but we told them we didn't need them. We'd already called you, and you were on your way. And he said, okay, all right, everything's clear. Y'all go ahead and leave. So they begin leaving, they pull off, and the man says, I'm just exhausted. And so he asks his wife, do you care if I get out and get in the back and lay down and just sleep the last little ways home and you can drive? Oh, no, I don't mind at all. So he gets out and walks around to the back, and she's sliding over into the driver's seat. She's putting her seatbelt on, and she hears the, you know, on those camper shells, you raise the lid, right? And you get in. Well, his hand slipped and it slammed shut. He's in the back. Boom! So off she goes. He's standing on the side of the road, waving his arms, hollering at him, stop, stop, stop! As she's driving off. What do? You're standing on the side of the highway, you just start walking. So he starts walking, and he's walking, and he's walking. About that time, the trooper pulls up. What are you doing? Hell, you're not going to believe it. So he tells his story. And the trooper says, just get in, I'll take you home. I appreciate it. So they drive on to their house, and they pull up in their driveway. And for whatever reason, his wife's not home yet. And so he says, you know what? I don't have any keys. I'm just going to sit. And they had one of those big swings on the porch, they said. He just climbed up in that swing and leaned back and thought, I'll just stay here until she gets home. Thank you so much. And the officer leaves. A little bit later, the wife pulls in the truck, and she's pulling up to the garage, and she looks over and sees her husband sitting on the porch and going, how are you? And as she's looking at him, she runs through the garage door with the truck. Just when you think things are going really, really well in your life, sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes they seem like they happen boom, 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 one after another, after another, after another. Or maybe even in our life, some things just all come at one time. Have you ever felt like it's just too much? There's too many things going on in our life. There's too many things, and I don't know how to deal with it. And I can't help but think the church, this new church, this young church, and all the things that are starting to happen to it are probably starting to get a little afraid. What's next? What's going to happen to us? Where are we going? What's going to be next? And so you think back in chapter 4, and you remember Peter and John were taken and they were put in prison. And they were warned, don't talk about this Jesus anymore. Don't do those things. Don't live the life that you've been living. It's not any good. And we're telling you, don't do it. And so these things begin happening. And last week we were looking in the beginning of chapter 5. And we saw where Ananias and Sapphira, God struck them dead for the atrocities in their life. And so we see some things happening in the church, and maybe I don't really know what exactly is going through their mind, but look down now in chapter 5 and verse 17 with me. The high priest rose up along with his associates, the sect of the Sadducees. Look really closely what he says. And they were filled with jealousy. Now here are the spiritual leaders of the Jews, the high priest himself, with those closest to him, and it says they're absolutely and completely filled with jealousy. Now I don't know how you define jealousy, but I heard one time this phrase, and I think it's pretty accurate. Someone said jealousy is that which will not allow one to applaud the success of someone else. And so here are the spiritual leaders looking at what's really going on in the world and how Christianity is changing that world for good, and they can't applaud for the success, not for the success even of Peter and John and the other apostles, but the success that God had in raising His Son from the dead and bringing about change in a dark world. These men are so eaten up with jealousy. So eaten up that it is destroying who they are. And they want the church to be destroyed. They don't want the church to look like it looks. They don't want the church to act like it's acting. They don't want the church to have the influence in their culture, in their society any longer. They want the church destroyed. These spiritual leaders are not very spiritual because they've allowed Satan to come into their life and change the message of the gospel. Because the gospel is supposed to be good news. And so they take the apostles and they throw them in jail and they lock the doors. But in the middle of the night, we know the story that an angel gets them out and he says, you go back to the temple and you preach the whole message of this truth. And so they return. And on the following day, the apostles do that very thing. The whole message of this life, what they're commanded to do in verse 20. And then the high priest comes and he calls together the council, the high council, the Sanhedrin. And he tells the guards, go get these men and bring them before us so that we can question them, so that we can continue our interrogation of them. So this group goes to the jail, and they get there, and the doors are locked. And there are guards present. But when they go inside to get them out, the apostles aren't there. And they don't know why they're not there. The guards don't know why they're not there. Where are they? No one knows where they are. And it says that they were perplexed. I love that word, perplexed. That time when you sit there And so you have the council, and you have the guards, and you have all of these, and they're trying to question these men, and God is giving them one more opportunity to stop and actually think about what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish. He's giving them one more time to stop and not do something against His will, but to listen to Him and do exactly what He's told them to do. He's giving them another opportunity. How many times in our life are we given opportunities that we don't take? When we're perplexed, when we're thinking about something, maybe that's God telling us, slow down. Slow down and think about what I've revealed to you. In verse 25 and following, it says, they were found in the temple. And they were there preaching, and then they went and they brought them before the council. And it says they took them gently because they were afraid of what the people were going to do. I would be too, wouldn't you? Tens of thousands are following the message that they're preaching. Now, I don't understand everything they're preaching as these guards, but I know that there are a lot of people following them, and I'm not going to run in there. So they ask them and come. They bring them before the council. And in verse 28, the council begins that. It says, we gave you strict orders not to continue teaching in this name. And yet you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. Now hold on, just time out for a second. If you think back to Matthew, in Matthew chapter 27, Pilate has Jesus before him and he's questioning him. And he asks him all these questions and he goes back out to the Jews and he says, I don't find anything wrong with this man. And they say, No. You kill him anyway. You crucify him. He says, no, I've asked him. I've questioned him. I've done all this. There's nothing wrong with him. But you have this custom and I'll either give you Barabbas or I'll give you Jesus. Which one do you want? And they said, give us Barabbas. You crucify Jesus. And Pilate says, there's nothing wrong with him. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm innocent as he washes his hand. I'm innocent of this man's blood. This blood is on you. And what did they say? Anybody remember? Let his blood be on us and our children. The same men that just said, crucify him, kill him, and let his blood be on us, let us have the guilt, are now saying, you're just inciting a riot and you're telling everybody that his blood's on us. But didn't you just say it's okay? I'll accept his blood on me and even on my children. I think Luke's writing that just so we'll remember the necessity that this blood was shed and the guilt that we've all played a part by sending him to that cross. But how we respond to it is totally different. You see, these people, these religious leaders of the Jews are not responding to that blood that was shed in the same way that God calls for us. And it says in verse 33, when they heard this, actually, right before that, they are questioning them again, telling them, don't preach. And Peter and all the apostles, it says it one more time, we must obey God rather than you. You don't have any authority in our life. Sorry, you don't. We can't listen to you, we have to listen to God. And so the insinuation or that they're getting in this is that they're godless heathens and they don't have the truth and everything that they've been teaching their life is false. And so what does it do? It says in 33, when they heard this, they were cut to the quick. There was a lot of pain all of a sudden in their life. Everything they've given their life to, all of those things that they've believed in, all of that is their life has just been destroyed. And they don't know what to do with it. They don't know what to do with the truth that's being taught. And it says, so they intended to kill all the apostles. That was their plan. This is how we're going to fix it. We're just going to kill all of them. And yet in the midst of them, Gamaliel is there. Now he is probably the best known teacher of the law in that day. Paul even talked about being educated under him. This is like an Ivy school education, Ivy League school education, if you were trained under Gamaliel. So everyone's listening. Even the high priest listens to him. And listen to what he says. First off, he says, now, think about what you're doing. Stop for a second. Don't make any harsh decisions. You need to just stop where you are and think about what you're doing. How do you think about it? He says, well, think about history. And he names some people. And he says, you know, they had followers. They were saying, hey, I've got the way. And they started recruiting people, and people began following them. But in a short time, what happened? Everybody fell away because it didn't amount to anything. He said, remember that. And a third thing he says is, this that's going on will come to nothing unless what? Unless it's from God. And if this message is from God, you better be careful. Because then you'll be found fighting against God. Who wants to fight against God? Do you remember our history? And that's kind of the things you're doing. You're pulling those memories out of their minds, out of these religious leaders. Do you think they remember crossing the Red Sea? Do you think they remember all the things God has done for these people throughout all the generations? You better believe they remember it. Don't do this because you could be fighting against God. Is that how you want to go before God? Fighting against Him. It says they took His advice and decided not to do it. But instead they beat them or flogged them, as some translations say. Now think about what's going on. The church, things are going really well. And now all of a sudden the apostles are thrown in jail again. And now they're taken out before the high priest and the council, and they're beaten. Now, this is not a teacher with a paddle at school like I grew up under. Or a belt at home, or a switch that once in a while I got, and my little brother got a lot more than me. But it's not like that. That's not what he's talking about. These men were beaten. And those whips that they would use, and some of them they would tie thorns or little pieces of metal in that leather or little rocks in it. And when you get hit across the back with that, it's tearing flesh off of your back. And immediately, they get beaten and they're sent out. Verse 40, it says, when they took his advice and after calling the apostles in, they beat them or flogged them and ordered them not to speak in the name of Jesus. And then they released them. They released him. How are you feeling when you walk out after being beaten like that? Boy, I mean, it's good, right? You feel good and I'm ready to go. Let's go back to the temple and let's start preaching. I don't know. I'm thinking I'm going to go to the doctor. I cut my finger. I want to go get stitches in or something because it hurts. And I tore my hand open one time on a T-post and I went straight to the hospital because I almost blacked out looking at my hand cut open. And it hurts so bad, I didn't want to do it. And so I look at these men and I think, they're in a bad way. And the church is looking at them, and the church is in a bad way because their leaders have just been beaten half to death and commanded, don't ever do this again, and people are watching. Look at verse 41, 42, and we'll close this morning. So they went on their way from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they had been considered worthy to suffer shame for His name's sake. How do you rejoice for being beaten? How do you rejoice when someone has told you don't do something and if you do, we're going to beat you and imprison you? Because you know what that relationship means. You know where your life is without them. They can hurt your flesh, but they cannot take you from God. They cannot destroy that home that the Lord has already prepared. They cannot destroy a relationship from the Creator of the world who created you in His image. They cannot take that relationship with you no matter what they do or no matter what they say. There are things going to come in our life that are going to distract us. There are going to be punishments. There are going to be things come up in our life that we're going to be told what to do and what not to do. We're going to be told how to live our life. And there's going to be a day come, and I don't know how far off it is, but there's going to be a day when we're going to be commanded not to teach the truth. As a matter of fact, it's already happening. I've had a number of kids in the last several years from all across our county, right here in Seminole, who've told me they have teachers that are telling them, you cannot speak the name of God in a classroom or we're going to kick you out of this class. We'll send you to the office to be disciplined. Is that not the same thing? You can't talk about God in school. You can't talk about Him in a classroom. You can't talk about Him in the grocery store. You can't talk about Him anywhere else. Peter said, sorry, but you tell me which is better for me, to obey you or to obey my God. Now, I know you're struggling, some of you right now. Aren't our kids supposed to respect authority? Absolutely. Right up to the point when someone says, deny God. And then there's only one authority in our life. No one has that authority to tell us not to listen and follow after God. No one has that authority. Verse 42, and we'll close. And every day in the temple and from house to house, every day in the temple and from house to house, they never stopped teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. Do you hear that? When did they stop? They never stopped. Every single day, Jesus is the Lord of my life, and everything that I do is going to center around that. And at any point in this life, someone tells me, no, that I can't do that. I'm sorry, but I'm going to listen to God and not man. You have no authority in my life. Only God has authority in my life. I'm sorry, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to assure you this morning, you're going to have difficulties in your life. The early church did. They were beaten. They were put in prison. They were told not to preach. They were told all of those things. But they said, we can't listen to you. We'll listen to God. The question you're going to have to answer is really simple. What cause in your life will stop you from teaching Jesus as the Christ? What in your life, will cause you to stop teaching about Jesus as the Christ? Have you? Have you already found that cause? Has something helped you or caused you to quit talking about Jesus as the Christ? We'll not be found faithful when we do that. But what is the end? What do we have waiting for us? What did God tell us? We're part of His kingdom. We're His children. He is our Father. He has never been unfaithful to us. He's never not taken care of us. And He always will. This world is not our home. The song we sing, I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. This world is has some really good things. And this family is a wonderful thing to be a part of. And we grow and we strengthen one another. And that's what God has called us to do. To be a difference in this world. With our hope set on Him in eternity. Where is your hope this morning? Is your hope in Jesus Christ? If it's not, you have no hope. But if it is, you have all hope. One day you'll hear those words, well done, good and faithful servant. Welcome home. Are you ready to be welcomed home? Only you know and can answer that question. If you're not, don't leave this morning without being ready. It's not anything big to do. All you have to do is name Jesus as the Lord of your life. It's pretty simple, isn't it? Be immersed into Him, and in Him we gain all those spiritual blessings. We've talked about this over and over and over. All spiritual blessings are in Jesus Christ. Forgiveness, sanctification, peace with God. Everything is in Jesus. Are you in Christ? You can be this morning. If you confess His name before men and are immersed into Him, you can have those blessings. Have you done that yet? And if you have you taken that life back? Have you allowed someone to scare you out of that relationship? Don't be scared. Our Father owns this world and the one to come. He owns it. He created it. He'll protect us and bless us. If you need to respond to Him and His invitation this morning, we ask you to come right now while we stand and we sing together.